Welcome to the Yak Sports Podcast with Joe Deck and Leland McCray.
Joe, before we jump into the end of the madness, we'll talk at least a second here about some locals. We had some big matchups happening last week, and I was really focused on that Riverheads-Wilson baseball game on Friday. That's been just kind of a general rivalry on the diamond, and it lived up on Friday. They went to 9 scoreless innings where Wilson walked off with a sacrifice fly. So no, neither team coming out of that one saying, oh, they're just a step beyond the other. But Wilson gets the victory, and that's what's important. And the big thing is Wilson's backed it up with another victory over a hot start Waynesboro team here on Tuesday. So Wilson starts the district 3-0, and what was a rough start to the season with some tough out-of-district opponents. Now that they got an in-district, we're seeing what Wilson usually does in the district. I'm not feeling the separation from them that we've seen in the past, but still seeing, Wilson near the top as we expected.
Yes. That was one of the teams we thought would be up at the top. They're doing very well. And as you said, I think, you know, seeing Waynesboro up here maybe gives us some hope for 3C. But I will say that, with Wilson getting the win in important games already in district play, it kind of feels like, and there's still a lot of baseball to be played, and you hate to say this, but it kind of feels like we're starting to get to the point where, is it over? There's return trips in these matchups. Maybe Waynesboro picks off Wilson. Maybe Riverheads can figure out some stuff, but I don't know. And here's the thing. Wilson maybe wins the district. Maybe Wilson wins the district, but I don't think. Yeah, but while I'm more confident today than I was, I think, a week or two ago when we talked about this on Wilson having success in the postseason, I need to see more. The one-run games need to be larger wins.
Yeah, I think if we're talking postseason projections, I think a lot to be said there. You want to see some more improvement. You want to see some good on good. And, adding Waynesboro up into the mix and stuff makes you think maybe we're seeing some of that based on what the challenges were out of district. As a Riverheads homer, a one-run game that goes scoreless to the ninth, I'm not going to write Riverheads off after losing that game. They're right in that, Wilson won because they were at home kind of thing. That's how you can frame that. They'll get Wilson coming back up to Riverheads, and they've had some throwdowns in past years. So I'm hopeful for that. And if they're able to play Wilson pretty tight, a team that's traditionally a solid team, that's going to give me hope for them in 2B. Now, is it substantial hope? I don't know. 2B can be tough with Strasburg. Page County has had their time. We'll have to see when we get there. I was uplifted a little bit that Stuart Straff finally got, a win here. I was worried about what was ahead of them for the district with the way their non-district went. I think they're 1-7 non-district or something close to that. 1-5, and then their early losses in the Shenandoah weren't good. To knock off Buffalo Gap on Tuesday night, at least there's a sign of hope that there's the one. So now can you add to the one? So, and that's, I'm saying that because Draft is usually a team we're seeing at the top, and that's one of the teams in the mix for the what can they do in the postseason, and they weren't showing any of that. I'm not saying that hope is back. I'm just glad they're not absolutely over for the rest of the way here. So I think a positive to pull from early results. Draft had a sign of life there.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right, so plenty of opportunities coming up. The track season kind of gets underway here. I know the Augusta County Invitational here, I think, is in 2 weeks. That's always a big one. I think used to be a bigger one. I think of recent years, it's not quite as popular. But a lot of track opportunities, so I encourage people to get out there. And we'll have more coverage of all the local sports as it now we're in district season. So it's a lot easier for us to pull in information. But it's been basketball season until last night. And that's why we're recording on Tuesday. And NCAA has wrapped up. But I'm going to go to what finished on Sunday first. And that was the women's South Carolina Gamecocks, coached by Dawn Staley, knocking off Iowa and Caitlin Clark and everything that they have been doing. And I think it was a culmination on Sunday of one of the just a memorable women's basketball season, one where it used the momentum that that sport had gained the last couple of years and really produced a fun season. And postseason was good. The tournament was good. I can't look at anything that happened in the tournament and say, oh, that wasn't good enough. You know, that let us down. I know Iowa didn't win the championship. And that was the team everybody was focused on all year, but they made it to the championship game. And if that's 2 years in a row they did that. It kind of feels when they are star-led, that was maybe a cap, you know, a peak of their season. I started having a heck of a lot more confidence that they could make something happen. I know a few weeks ago I was saying, I don't believe in Iowa to win a championship game. But the way they played right at the very end and then in the tournament, absolutely in the tournament, I was saying it out loud. Like, yeah, they're going to challenge South Carolina. They came out 10-0 in that game. They were giving them a game. South Carolina got it going, and they showed how deep they were. That was the difference there, was South Carolina got into foul trouble, just like Iowa tried to do with everybody else, and then South Carolina's freshmen are coming in and kicking butt. And that's the difference between South Carolina and everybody else right now. They're just so deep. So, I feel satisfied with the season. Going into the game, my kid's like, who do you want to win? And they've been cheering for Iowa and Caitlin Clark. I would love that. I just want a close game. It wasn't quite as close as I wanted it in the end, but at least it was a satisfying ending. I would have been satisfied with either team winning. But I did think coming in, and that's why I picked them in my bracket, South Carolina was going to win, and they did. And so I thought it was a fun season. Comment on that, and then we'll talk about the overall picture for women there.
Okay. And I do apologize. I caught most of what you said, but I might have missed parts. So when you're I fine. Ask a question here in a minute, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, you never listen anyway. So I'm with
well, that. There's a lot going on, and we'll get to what has captured my attention that happened right before we started. But hey, good news, Jeff, it's not soccer. But
I was watching soccer right before we got on.
I did too. I was too, but then something else happened like literally right after that ended. To your overall point for the championship game, I actually thought there were a lot of parallels between the women's championship game and the men's championship game. Player of the year is in the game. Player of the year loses to a team. And I'm not saying that Iowa doesn't have other good players. They absolutely do. But it's not as deep. And you touched on that. We learned exactly that against South Carolina. Iowa's bench had no points in the game. I think Purdue's bench in the men's championship had two. So, like, it was bad in terms of the depth of the teams that lost in these championship games. And I think that's why the scores got a little lopsided in those games. South Carolina is a really great team. They're undefeated. They were undefeated last year and lost to this Iowa team. So that's another motivating factor for them. Hey, we're not going to lose to these girls again. And they came out and they played very well. Dawn Staley is one of the greatest coaches in the women's basketball history. She's going to go up there with the Pat Summits and the Gina Wariemas. Like, that's where she belongs on that pantheon. This was a great win for South Carolina. I thought they were a great team all year. I will say I did think the women's tournament was a little more open this year than the men's tournament. It turns out South Carolina, you know, they had some really, really tight games in the tournament. And this one wasn't one of them. But I want to go back to the Final Four round. And this is where I'm not sure if you mentioned it or not. Did you talk about Iowa UConn into the game?
Not really. Okay. I had a point coming, but start talking about it and I'll get there.
Okay. Well, I want your opinion before I start. Because I have already solidified my opinion. I had my opinion when it happened, and I thought I was on crazy pills.
Oh, the last call.
Yeah.
You never see that call made. I said it as it happened. You just never see that call made. There was a slight shoulder turn. I know people say, like, technically that's a charge. You just never see that call. I would rather it play out without it.
I would. Okay. Well, this is then we disagree.
I'd rather it have been played without it, because I've watched so many basketball games where that is not called. So I'd rather not taint what we're talking about with that. But I liked what they said in the post game. I mean, and those girls in the post game are so great. I'm glad they're getting a lot of play. You know, there was still free throws and a rebound opportunity after that UConn did not handle. So, like, I just wish there wasn't that deciphering of a call or not. But I if in a perfect world, that wouldn't have been called that way. UConn would have gotten off a shot and missed, and Iowa would have been the championship game. That's what I was kind of looking for there. I'd rather it have gone that way than – the very technical call there that seemed a lot tighter than what we had seen throughout the game.
Okay, two things then. Because we disagree on this. And when I watched it live, okay, I was like, why is everybody losing their mind? That's a movie. That's an illegal screen. That's an illegal screen.
It is illegal screen. Yep.
She's one. You mentioned the shoulder a little bit, but the elbow is out on that.
Yeah.
And also her legs are way wider than her shoulders, which is when you're setting a pick where they're supposed to be shoulder width apart, and they're way wider. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, she got away with it one time. And then she turned around, did it again. And I think the ref was just like, all right, I got to call it this time. And people are like, oh, you can't call that. This ref's terrible. Blah, blah. I'm like, if it's a foul in the first quarter, if it's an illegal screen in the first quarter, it's an illegal screen in the fourth quarter. And if it's an illegal screen at the beginning of the fourth quarter, it's an illegal screen with 30 seconds left. And I'm sorry that happened, but them's the breaks. Them's the rules.
I really credit Paige. She said,
yeah, Paige Beckers said
that's a tough call, but it shouldn't come down to that one call. And yes, how many things did I do in this game that could have made that one play not mean the game? So I appreciate that. I think a lot of post-game conversations, a lot of post-game quotes coming out of the women's room were just great and showed great sportsmanship and great competitiveness all around. Yeah, I didn't go crazy, if that helps you. Like, I didn't like stand up and say, oh, you
know, I know.
That.
I didn't see you post it, but I saw a lot of people on social media, like when it was happening, post it. And I was like, man, I feel like I must be taking crazy pills. That looks like an illegal screen to me. And
it was illegal screen.
What was funny is I had just come back from a VCU baseball game that night. Next day, I'm going back to call another game. And the conversation breaks out in that press box. Like, what'd you make of that call? And I won't name names because a lot of conversations up there are not, they're not that they're inappropriate, but they're not expecting comments to go public. Not that anything bad would happen, but there was a VCU official that was like, yeah, it's an illegal screen. Why are people mad? It's an illegal screen. The call should have been made. Yeah. Like
standing on top of the fence on this, but it's what I said on Friday night. I said, that's an illegal screen. It's technically right.
But it's like the people
70% of the time.
Here's my problem. These are the same people that are screaming if a ref doesn't call pass interference just because it's the last play of the game. Like, then what do you want the ref to do? There's nothing here's the thing. There was a large portion of the country who wanted UConn to win because everyone's talking about Iowa. Everyone's talking about Caitlin Clark, and they fell in love because UConn was pushing them, and they're like, oh, wow, maybe Caitlin Clark goes down here. Maybe UConn wins, and we get to see Paige Beckers in the national championship game. And Gino Auriemma versus Dawn Staley, that would be exciting. And they get their hopes
next
up for that. Coming. Yeah, they get their hopes up for that. And then that foul call happens, and they're like, ah, well, the West Virginia game, which, by the way, that's a foul when they're pressing and the girl is all over her trying to steal the ball. It's a foul. And they're like, why is Iowa shoot so many more free throws than West Virginia? Because Iowa doesn't press them all the way up the floor. Like, this is my problem. And this is how you know people aren't serious people. When the answers are right in front of your face and they just ignore them. Like, there's this logical explanation. Here's this logical explanation. No, that can't be it.
Yeah.
They wanted Caitlin Clark to win. That's what it was.
I think we've seen this in other areas of life right now, too. So
yeah, well, yes. And it's just like, I can't take you seriously. We can't have a serious conversation.
I was still satisfied with the outcome of that game and what it built into. My issues with Iowa, any negative I had about Iowa, I acknowledge the hype around Iowa and Caitlin Clark. That's the media. That's not Caitlin Clark's, like doing every interview on earth. Like, she's doing the interviews that are asked of her. Like, I just don't feel like, I don't know. I don't put the blame on this player here. I don't, it's honestly the Taylor Swift thing. Like, I'm not going to blame Taylor Swift for everybody going freaking nuts about her and who she's dating and all that. I'm not going to put it on her. I'm going to say, I just don't like the machine around them. And so that's the same thing for Caitlin Clark. I don't have hate for her. I don't really agree with the dynamic that, like, she's overrated. I think she's properly rated. She's great. She's a great player. One of the best players that have come through. She's a great scorer. She's a great offensive player. does that mean next year she's going to dominate the WNBA? No, I don't believe that. I think both can be true. And I think you hear Diana Taurasi and players like that acknowledge she's a great player. She's starting from the bottom again, you know, not maybe not the bottom. She's going to come in with a lot of talent, but like she's going to be playing against pros that have been doing it for years. So like, we can't just expect her to do that, but like she's starting at a point where she could get back up there again. And at some point be very, very good in the WNBA. I think when everybody starts trying to draw parallels between her and Michael Jordan or LeBron James, I'm like, just she's her and she's awesome and it's great and she can be good and she's going to go into this league with a lot of other good players. And I think it's going to bring a lot of eyeballs renewed to the idea of the WNBA. I don't think people are against the WNBA. I think some of these people that are going to have a renewed interest in that, you know, might have been there 20 years ago when the league was doing stuff and have gone away. Maybe this will help re-energize that. I'm hopeful. My kids are already asking, where is she going to play next year? She's not at Iowa. Where is she going to go? Like, I think our house will have WNBA on more than it was before. I can't imagine I'm the only house saying that. So we'll see if that, you know, how that comes to term. I think after I already looked on the WNBA schedule, they don't really list the TV assignments yet. I assume that's after the draft they'll do that. So I'm interested to see how this ESPN schedule plays out. I know ION has games. Might have to find the ION channel.
I believe you have it.
Yeah, I probably do. I'm not as aware of it right now. Yeah. So we're going to want to watch those. I think it's awesome that Phoenix that has Diana Taurasi is already selling tickets for, you know, Diana Taurasi versus the rookie. And it's just like a shadow figure, even though the Fever or the Indiana team hasn't even drafted Caitlin Clark yet. It's just that for sure that's going to happen. I don't know. I'm optimistic that it can help the WNBA. I don't know if it's some save all by any means, but like I'm optimistic that some of this can carry. I hope the women's college game stays elevated. It's hard to stay at three games in a row being the most watched women's game of all time. These games being the most highly watched basketball game, period, men or women, in some time. You know, like I think that's hard to hold that standard. But if it can stay elevated, win. That's awesome. And I think it can, because I think Caitlin Clark might have brought some eyeballs in because of the record she was tearing down and the length of time she's just done this. But people got to learn about South Carolina and how dominant. Oh, they must be good if they're beating Caitlin Clark kind of attitude. But no, they've been good. And here's UConn. Oh, yeah, I remember hearing about them a bunch. And, you know, the other teams. LSU brings a lot of eyeballs, and like them or hate them, like they're good. And Kim Mulkey's going to have a winner down there. So, you know, they could be the evil empire. I don't know. You know, you got a lot of moving around. You got Kenny Brooks. He's a great coach. We know that. Going into Kentucky, who has the resources. We have Tennessee making a change with a coach with a coaching style that's going to be interesting in the SEC against these teams. The run and gun, Grinnell type system, calmed down to a degree at Tennessee. That's going to be weird to see. It's going to be interesting. So I think we have a lot of attention towards the women's college game right now. And I'm interested to see some of those branches now, because this year it feels, last year felt like it really came up. This year we're going to start seeing some of those branches and the storylines for the other teams. Iowa's not coming in as a favorite next year. UConn and South Carolina, you know, South Carolina number one, UConn probably number two, is those big stories next year. And they have stars that people will remember. So I think it'll be cool to see how people regroup their interest in the women's game and where it goes. And it'll be on in our house, but it was already on in our house. So I'm hoping other people that just turned it on will stay as excited.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to watch there for next year.
Yeah.
And it should be in a good place. Men's side, UConn.
Dominant.
I mean, that was... When they were up 6 at halftime, I just laughed. Because I was like, this is money in the bank. Like, there is no way Purdue is going to win this game, let alone cover. Like, they were done. And it's not because Purdue is better than I gave them credit for coming into the tournament. That being said.
You watched them. The proof was not there. Like,
yeah, that
they
being
were good
said,
last year, apparently, and they lost to a 16.
UConn, it was that much better than everybody else. Every game down, they lost three games all year. And every game in the conference tournament on, tied at halftime, except for the Stetson game. They just straight up killed Stetson. But close at halftime, blowout after that.
Yeah.
And this was no different. Close at half, like 6 points, that might have been one of the larger margins at halftime, honestly. But tight-ish at halftime, and then second half, UConn buries them. Like, just absolutely walking Purdue out of there. And it went to kind of a conversation I was having with other people the day of the game on, what do you think is going to happen tonight? And I was like, Zach Edey is really good, but I don't think Purdue has an answer outside of Zach Edey. Whereas UConn has a guy who can guard Zach Edey, yeah, and then they've got some guards who are going to absolutely terrorize Purdue.
Yeah. I don't remember a tournament run as dominant as this. I know they put the stat up on the TV and was,
well, it was
like
the largest.
Just don't remember. But even those other ones that they put up, like, I don't remember having that feeling from them too. So like, I just was really impressed by what they did. Looking at their season, the three losses, they lost to Kansas, number five at the time, Kansas. I'm not going to hold that against them. I didn't get then either.
Yeah.
They lost at Seton Hall. Seton Hall's a terrible team. They lost at Seton Hall right after they played number 10, Gonzaga, and beat them. So a road game in conference against a lesser opponent, their minds weren't in it. Like, that's explainable. Not, you know, maybe not, you know, not great, but explainable. And then they lose to Creighton, a great team this year, a tournament team, number 15 when they played them. They had just come off the number four Marquette game where they beat Marquette. A road game at Creighton late in the season. Like, you can understand the mindset of what they did this season in those three losses, and it just is right within absolutely dominating everything since then. Beating Villanova by 24, beating Seton Hall the second time they played them by 30, beating Marquette when they're now number eight, beating Providence by 14, Xavier by 17, like just dominating everybody. See, St. John's was the closest game they had after the last game they lost. So like, then they took it to the tournament and just did it there too. So they were my pick for the champion. I don't often get that right. You know, I don't. I couldn't pick anybody else this year, and I'm glad I picked them. I know everybody had them ahead of me, and so I only moved up with so much. But they were the best team. They had proven it all year, and I'm very satisfied with both of these tournaments that the team that I thought was the best won the tournament. And this tournament doesn't always produce that. Where we talk about other sports and expanding playoffs and stuff like that, one of the drawbacks is you start creating this tournament, the team that's proven itself the best throughout the year might not win it. And basketball gets hammered for that sometimes when these other teams win the championship or go to the Final Four, and it's like, oh, it's not really producing what we've seen all year. But that's what makes the tournament fun, and it is. But I am very satisfied. Like, I can't throw any hate at this when the team that I watched all season be the best. Maybe I didn't watch them all season, but the team in season that I knew was the best, saw the highlights, then finally caught up with some games. Yeah, they were the best team. I'm satisfied with that. And that was fun to watch. I will say, he wore on me. The coach wore on
Dan
me.
Dan Hurley? Yeah.
Dan Hurley wore on me. I'm not cursing him like Mulkey yet, but his style wore on me. They're easily not a likable. Like, you could start not liking UConn anytime now. Like, it's like, I get that. I don't know if I'm again. I guess I'm satisfied with seeing greatness be great this year. Another year or two of them on top might have me wishing for them to go down just with how much noise is coming off that bench.
Yeah. He's very confident.
Not my style. It's not what I like. I feel like I'm somewhat consistent in this, and you know, like, I'm saying I like Kenny Brooks and not Kim Mulkey. I like, Dawn, and I don't like Mulkey. I'm not throwing him all the way down quite yet. I can see it coming.
Yeah. He's very confident.
He is. And like, credit to him. When 2020, he said, or 2021, whatever it was.
It was 2020.
Like, you better get us now. Yeah. We're coming.
Yeah.
They came. That's great. Like, so credit. You backed it up.
They did. And then Calipari, peace out Kentucky.
That was a surprise.
Peace out Kentucky going to Arkansas. turns out Tyson, all those Tyson chicken nuggets coming through for the Razorbacks.
I think it's funny because, like, people are like, well, yeah, Arkansas, they have all this money. They have all this Walmart money and all this Tyson chicken money. And I'm like, that's new? That's
then
new
why aren't like, they better sudden, like, at football?
Why were they doing this 10, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's wild. Kentucky basketball will be fine, but.
They will. I mean, for any heartache that I have that, like, man, I thought we were a team that could hold on to Kenny Brooks, but he goes to Kentucky, and I guess that's just, hey, Kentucky just lost the coach to Arkansas. So, all right, I don't, yeah.
I do think there's other things. I think there's other,
go anywhere.
Yeah, I think there's other things there. I think Calipari was maybe feeling a lot of heat that he probably didn't think he deserved, and so he was like, okay, fine. I'm not saying he's right or wrong. I'm just saying there was a lot of people loud complaining about Calipari in Kentucky, and he might have. I'm not saying it's the only reason. The dollar bills definitely helped, but I think there was probably part of him that was like, "All right, fine. You know what? Not only am I going to leave, I'm going to go somewhere where I'm going to play you."
If I'm rolling in that KFC money and then donating it back to Kentucky, if I'm donating my Maker's Mark money or my Buffalo Trace, but whatever else is made in Kentucky, I am getting frustrated with Calipari having top two recruiting classes year after year after year after year and not having made a Final Four since 2016, not advancing to the Sweet 16 in 4 or 5 years. Like, there was a resume there to have some complaints about for the high level of recruiting and talk that was coming out of Calipari. So I get the noise and understand it. I wish I was in a position to have that, like, kind of complain about my head coach. Like, you know, your top recruiting classes just aren't producing enough. And, you know, we haven't won a national championship in a certain amount of years. Like, we've never won one. So, it was a surprise on Sunday night. Now, there was the fight, you know, there was the talk and all that, and the buyout talk, but, like, that came and went in a day after they got eliminated from the tournament. So I didn't think this was going to be the time that he went. So it is, and it'll make for incredible storyline at least twice next year when I assume they'll play twice next year. I'm sure the SEC will move the schedule to make sure they play twice next year. But yeah, it's a lot. It's something.
On the plus side, Kentucky saves $18.5 million. They don't have to do that buyout.
Yeah. Now, when Nate Oates goes there, all my Alabama hate and all my issues with Nate Oates at Alabama follows.
Oh. Yeah.
Nate Oates is my issue. Last year, 12, 13 months ago, who was I complaining about at Alabama? It was the decision makers that were allowing that player that was closely involved in a murder and the other players on the team that murdered, and they got off the team. But this other guy that's really good, not being affected by his proximity to a murder, I had an issue with the decision makers there.
And
if that decision maker goes to Kentucky, I am not going to be happy. I'm not going to just forget about that and leave that at Alabama. I don't like Nate Oates, though. It helps. Like, I don't like his way either. So,
yeah, and what you're saying is you're still going to hate Kentucky because you did not like Calipari.
I didn't like Kentucky before either. Yeah, it's
yeah.
My hate will remain. It's easy.
So Kentucky still hated Alabama. Balls in your court?
Well, balls in their court. Yeah, I guess they'll have a fresh. The AD's still there that let him play, so I can still hold on to hate.
Rick Pitino?
Yeah. I don't think an SEC team gets Rick Pitino.
That was the other name that I heard floated with Kentucky.
We're back to Kentucky.
Which made me laugh. I was like, oh my gosh, if he goes back to Kentucky. But yeah, it's been a wild week in college basketball, that's for sure.
It has. Hey, and LeBron's kid, you know, declared for the draft but maintaining college eligibility.
There is no way there's no way he's going into the draft.
I just don't understand. Well, he's, you know, he could go in the NBA now because he's going to make a lot better of a pro than he will a college player. Like, this is the signs of a bad future. What's happening?
The only way he goes
maybe
pro,
he needs to go get a little more play time.
Yeah, the only way he gets drafted is a team is like, you know what, we think we can get LeBron if we draft him, and then we get LeBron. And as soon as LeBron retires, teams will do that. As soon as LeBron retires, they're going to look at LeBron's kid and be like, what are you still doing here?
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be...
Have you, like, on a tether behind him?
It's going to be an uncomfortable conversation for LeBron's kid as soon as LeBron retires. Like, I do think he needs to go back another year. Now, I do think it's possible he does not go back to USC.
Yeah.
And one of the exciting things there is where he chooses to go may give you an indication on where LeBron goes, because he might want to be near his kid again, and so he might pick a team.
I feel bad for the kid, in all honesty. I mean, it's all this, us even.
Oh, me a lot of it up. Is. Me, well, yes.
Up. It's LeBron's kid.
It's LeBron's kid. But also, like, once. LeBron, Bronny, yeah.
I know. I didn't say it. I said LeBron's kid.
But if you said LeBron, just, you would also be right.
Yeah. It's just sad. I do feel bad for this kid.
I feel bad for the kid. Some of this, like, on LeBron being like, hey, he's just a kid, like, everybody calm down. I'm like, is this the same kid that when you were watching the G League, you said, my son's already better than a lot of these guys? Not the G League, but the Summer League. During the Summer League, you said that. And so then people are like, oh, okay. And then when the mock drafts come out and they're like, actually, no, he's not ready. You're like, oh, everybody calm down. And I'm like, okay, well. Maybe don't hype him up
as
so much.
As a kid, probably.
I agree. I agree. He is a kid. But hey, LeBron, maybe don't say he's better than half the guys in the league already. And then he won't get hyped up.
I heard him say right when the college season ended, like, he's got some decision making to do and stuff like that. I can handle that comment.
That's fine.
And then just leave it at that. But then the next day there was a little more talk. And the next day there was a little more talk.
He's not helping. He's not helping.
Yeah, he's not helping. Honestly, early in the year, very seriously, and he had a medical issue and all that, and we didn't hear as much. I thought that was such a better time for everything. And I think you could have the same approach now that he's healthy, and it would benefit everybody.
Yeah.
This kid is never going to be LeBron James. Like, so let's stop giving him the attention that LeBron James got when he was 17 and 18.
I agree.
If he was going to be LeBron James, he'd be going to the NBA. So, and he's not. He's not going to.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I'm not going to judge the kid for that. What do you got?
I was ready to move on unless you had something else with college basketball.
No, I'm good. I kept saying LeBron's kid. So
I've been waiting very patiently.
Then do it.
This is honestly, like, we were about to have a dark podcast where I was about to not be engaged at all. Just because even though we won today against Boston, I wasn't excited. I wasn't happy. I watched the game, and there were some players who did well, some players who I think should be playing more than they are. But I kept wondering, why is one of our best players in Norfolk? Why is a handful of our best players in Norfolk? Why do we have a split squad like it's spring training? And one of those players is now called up. Jackson Holiday got called up literally right before we pressed record. Got called up, and I was excited. I immediately started texting people, sent something to Leland. It's awesome. It's awesome. It's great. This should have happened on opening day, but it's here now. I'm not going to complain about it anymore. I imagine Tony Kemp is the casualty of this roster move, which means that Tony Kemp finished 0-9. Great. See ya. Enjoy life. Wherever it may take you. And that's probably for the best, because Leland, I was getting angry when I was thinking about doing the podcast and thinking about this topic, because I was like, here's the thing. My anger isn't even really with Tony Kemp, because Tony Kemp, the Orioles were like, hey, Tony Kemp, here's some money. Want to come play? And he's like, yeah, sure. Why not? I don't blame him. I would too. I would also be Tony Kemp. I also would not have a hit if I had 9 at-bats in the major league season. But I also would take the money. And I'd be like, well, it's on the Orioles to figure it out. And they did. I think in Big Brain, Galaxy Brain, I told you right before we pressed record, I was like, I wonder if Tony Kemp planned it. Because when I saw Tony Kemp was in the lineup today, I said, if we lose to Boston today, burn the stadium down. because what are we doing? Putting Ramon Urias and Tony Kemp in this lineup. And Ramon Urias had a better day today. So his average shot all the way up to 0.91. Tony Kemp, as I mentioned, no hits and 9 at-bats. But then the other guy who's playing that absolutely shouldn't be playing is Austin Hayes. I mean, he's 2 for 26, no extra base hits, bad at baseball this year. Brandon Hyde is convinced he's going to break out of his slump. God bless him. He can't. Brandon Hyde can't get up there and say, yeah, Austin Hayes sucks. He can't do that. I get it. He can't sit there and go, yeah, I wish Kyle Stowers was on the major league team instead of this guy. It'd be cool if we had a guy that's, you know, hitting like over 300, almost 350, and just absolutely mashing the shit out of the ball in Norfolk and absolutely making minor league pitchers rethink their careers. But we can't have that because we got to have this guy. Like, I get he can't say that. I wish Colton Cowser played more, though, because he's on the team, and that's who should be playing more. And I don't care if he's batting against a lefty. I had this conversation with my brother this weekend. And this is the most infuriating thing when we have young players up. It's like, well, if they're a righty, they only bat against lefties. And if they're lefties, they only bat against righties. Because, God, Colton Cowser's a lefty hitter. I mean, gosh, how's he going to hit lefty pitching? Well, I tell you how he's not going to do it is never seeing it. So put him in the game. Let him hit. What's he going to do? Strike out? Okay, so he's Austin Hayes. Great. Maybe he puts the barrel on the ball, though, and it flies out of the yard. He almost hit one over the Green Monster today. Now, yes, that was a righty pitcher, but put him in the game. Let him hit. That's how he learns. You learn by doing. You don't learn by watching Austin Hayes go up there and strike out. Oh, did you take notes there, Colton? What'd you learn? Don't swing at balls in the dirt. Great. Check. I mean, fantastic. Cedric Mullins had a good day today, so his average is skyrocketed up to 188, too. Don't think he's not on notice. We got the guys behind him. And, like, that's the uncomfortable conversation. And all there's a lot of Orioles fans that hold on to, like, that one shining moment, to borrow the basketball song, when they look back at last year or, a few years ago, and they're like, oh, man, that walk-off homer he hit or that home run he robbed was so cool. And I'm like, yeah, but he sucks. Like, sorry, I want to win 100 games. They're like, well, if we do what we did after the Royals series, we would win 90 games this year. And I'm like, cool. Right. 90 games isn't going to win the division. We're in the best division in baseball. 90 games isn't going to do it. So you kind of need to just put your best players out there. Now, them bringing him up, I think, puts to rest the service time manipulation because it's still going to be a thing. Which is fine. It shouldn't. This is the other thing I was talking to my brother about. You cannot convince me that the extra year of eligibility for the Orioles is going to make or break us re-signing him. So, if that's not the case, what are we doing? Bring him up. Maybe it is the thing of they're just terrified at the idea of him facing lefties. I don't know. Because now we're getting a righties in Boston. So, I don't know. But he's on the team now. I'm happy. I'm thrilled. I can't wait to watch him play tomorrow. He probably won't play tomorrow. They'll probably bench him and put Ramon Urias in again just to rub my face in it. I don't know. But we're back. The Orioles are back. That's the headline. After losing a series to the Pirates, in which I kind of didn't want the team to come back from Pittsburgh after that performance, because they're like, oh, the offense is struggling. Why is the offense struggling? And I'm like, well, because you got a bunch of goofballs who shouldn't be on the major league team on it. Tony Kemp's walking around there in a major league uniform. He didn't pay over $100 for that, like I would. Why does he get a free MLB jersey to go out there and suck?
I mean, my question is, do I pick him up? Like, do I need to pick this kid up?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
He's going to be special. He's going to be good. He did good in spring training against major league pitchers. Like, that's the thing. he's absolutely mashed AAA. He's mashed everywhere he's been. The question is, you know, you have second, short, third, Jordan Westberg.
He's already taken in my league.
Yeah. Gunnar Henderson, Jordan Westberg, and Jackson Holiday. Gunnar and Jackson could play middle infield. Jordan Westberg can play middle in, can play second or third. He's not going to play short. That's the only thing we know about Jordan Westberg. I can't wait to find out what we do. But I'm excited. These are good problems. These are good players that you're trying to figure out who plays where and which holes do we put the good players in. Not, all right, well, here's the first six guys in the lineup. What do we do with 7, 8, and 9? I don't know. Just throw a name in a hat and pull it out and pick a sub 200 hitter. Like, go find me an out. I don't know why we have some of the guys on the team. Like, and not to be mean, because again, it's not their fault. I get it. But Austin Hayes, brother, it was cool last year when you had that hot month or two last year and you were looking great and you've done a lot of great things for the Orioles. But the guys behind you are better. So we shake your hand and we wish you luck wherever you go. Like, but it's not here. He's also got options. So you can put him in Norfolk if you really think Austin Hayes is going to be something special. I don't, but you can put him in Norfolk and see if he figures it out. I'd rather have Kyle Stowers up here and Austin Hayes there. That would be my point. Cubby Mayo's waiting too. So I don't know why Ramon Urias. I don't know how long we got to wait for Ramon Urias to figure it out. I haven't heard Brandon Hyde say that. Oh, he'll figure it out at the plate for the first time in his life.
All right. I guess that's dominating your life right now. I am about to be dominated with watching the Masters. It's a yearly conversation I have on this podcast because I watch it every year. It's, you know, the beginning of spring or beginning of summer. I don't know what it signifies, but I watch it every year. I know the hype. There'll be hype about Tiger playing in it. That's, you know, we're past this. We all need to get past this. It's not what's happening. I mean, if he wins, I'll win $351 because I put up 57 on it. But see, I'm honest. When I'm trying to calm everybody down and tell everybody how we should act, I still acknowledge that I'm acting that way too. No, but like, it's always my favorite tournament to watch. I also have a young person in my house that's very interested in golf. Watched like individual group play from 2 weeks ago on replay a day later for 2 hours solid. He sat there and watched it. So I'm optimistic the Masters and how great that podcast is. And the, you know, the live feed, the main feed that's constant ball, people hitting balls and it going in. And no commercials or limited commercial interruption. I'm excited to see how he reacts to it. So we're looking forward to that. He knows he's going to watch golf this weekend, so we're excited. We're going to take a break on Saturday as we go down to the spring game, which we're excited about too. But mostly this weekend, 3 out of the 4 days, we'll be watching the Masters. You know, looking at the favorites in it, like, you know, Rory's probably – Scottie Scheffler and Rory are up there as two of the favorites. John Rahm coming off the win last year. You know, if you're throwing dollars at people, I would say any of them. I really like Victor Hovland. I think when you start to get past five people down the list, Victor Hovland pops out to me as someone to watch. So that's my recommendations there. But I'm going to watch it and probably Thursday night and Friday night make a couple bets and in addition to what I've done with Victor Hovland. I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm in a fantasy Masters thing. I do it every year, and I finish near the bottom because I don't watch golf. It's fine. I'm not worried about it.
I like daytime sports and nothing like
– I like daytime sports too, but golf is not a sport. Golf is a leisure activity.
College basketball, you know, down the stretch of the season during the day on weekdays. You got baseball starting during the day throughout the summer.
Champions League was today.
And then you get this golf on Thursday and Friday, and they like starting at 8 in the morning. Like, I like having it on, so I'm excited. Real excited about it.
Champions League was today. Champions League is tomorrow. That's a sport.
I think saying golf's not a sport is a stance.
That's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek. Like, I understand it's a sport.
Yeah. It's a sport.
I'm never going to watch it on TV, if I can help it.
Yeah. I came up at the right time to when golf hit its peak, and it, you know, grabbed me.
Yeah, so I mean, Tiger Woods was big when I was growing up, and I never could watch it. Like, when I would sit down and watch it, I'd be like, God, I'd just rather do anything else.
I enjoy it.
And good for you. best of luck in your Masters watching.
Hey, I got someone to watch it with me now, so I'm excited.
Great.
He's also really taking up baseball, and all of a sudden, uh-huh. And then while being into baseball, well, we started playing on the PlayStation together. I love that MLB The Show has retro mode that's like early 90s Sega controls, basically, like, you know, the directional pad and one other button, and you can do a lot. Because I've been playing against two of my kids a lot that way. And then I was tired of playing that Saturday, I guess. And so I was like, oh, he'll like this. And I turned on The Sandlot. And now he has a new favorite movie. So it's been fun.
Great.
Yeah.
Make him an understand.
I get to see my kindergartner get to be me in fourth grade is what. That's how I think it's a three or four year difference right here. Like, when I was in fourth grade, all I did was play World Series 95 and watch Sandlot. That's all I did. Now I have a kindergartner doing it. So
that's great. And he can be an O's fan at the right time, because we just brought up Jackson Holliday, the future.
That topic was talked about in our house amongst the decision makers. And I said, I'm probably going to shove that orange and black at him. It's the local team.
Yep.
You know, we don't have to have the MLB package to watch them.
Yep.
It's easy. Now's a good time to get in. And it's true. Like, he's 5 years old.
He loved that hat when I was over a few years ago.
Yeah. Yep. So, like, I do think I'm going to put that in front of him. And hey, we might need to go see a game this summer.
Yeah.
I might have to go to Baltimore and go see a game this summer. So, I'm not against the Orioles. I never have been against the Orioles. They just never have been my team or had my player. Like, I had Griffey.
It's okay. Hey, when your young kindergartner hops on the bandwagon, Leland, there's plenty of room.
It's
you
not
come
a bandwagon.
Too. You come too.
It's not a bandwagon.
It's not a bandwagon, but when he hops on the Fan Express.
For me, it would be.
No, Leland, come on board, dude. Come on board. It's fine. No, nobody really.
You aren't around.
Nobody really wants to root for a team from Pittsburgh. Come on down. Join the Orioles.
I always kind of rooted for Pittsburgh, but I was a Marlins fan since their existence. I was a Marlins fan. Yeah. You don't know the turmoil I put myself through to claim a different fandom. I say this. I'm not for people ever changing fandoms. I don't believe in it. I did it. I just saw too much with that organization. Not the play on the field. It was everything else that I couldn't stand behind. And, you know, I think Washington football fans could have a similar thing. I wouldn't judge someone for moving away from Washington because of off the field bananas going on. So I did that and I defend it. And I also took a year off from cheering for anybody. And so the first year I was like, I'm moving over. Like, I'm solely committed to Pittsburgh. They made the playoffs that year. And I didn't celebrate it, or, you know, I was happy and all that, but like, I didn't beat my chest about my team because that's what it was. So I'm not doing that again. I'm not switching teams. I'm a Pittsburgh fan. I support Baltimore because they are local. And if my son likes them, even better. But I'm a Pittsburgh fan, and that's fine.
We're going to do it. You know, we just wrapped up March Madness, which some people think is the best postseason in sports. I think it's the Stanley Cup playoff. We're getting dangerously close to that. The Caps have...
Is next week you get to break down the whole playoff, or is that now?
Well, we're going to talk about the Chase, because there's a lot of...
Okay, what's going on? Where are we at? Where's my Lanch?
The Caps, the Washington Capitals,
who I thought
were dead and gone, are in a wild card spot if the season ended tonight with four
games
left on their schedule.
Didn't the Penguins do a similar thing?
Huh?
Didn't Pittsburgh do a similar thing?
Pittsburgh is in the race. That's the team that is right now 1 point behind them. The Caps had a much needed win over the Detroit Red Wings, who were in that last wild card spot until tonight when the Caps beat them. Now the Caps hopped them. There's four games left for the Caps, Pens, and the Red Wings. It is a great chase down the stretch.
How many wild cards? Two?
There are two wild cards. Tampa Bay is in. They are 100% going to be one of those wild cards.
So the Capitals and Penguins fighting for one available spot.
Caps, Penguins, Red Wings, Flyers, and even the Islanders aren't a sure thing, because technically the Caps could catch the Islanders and hop into that third automatic spot out of the division. And then the Islanders
would be... So that's
what
I'm rooting for. Yeah, I'm rooting for the Islanders getting out.
Okay. I honestly, well, I don't know. You're playing a good team no matter what. And then you have...
I'm rooting for the Islanders out. I'm not against the Capitals. I want the Capitals in, and I want the Penguins in.
Right. And the West, it's looking a little more settled. There's still a lot that can happen.
There's my Lanch. They're looking good. Look at them.
Yeah, the Lanch are in. They're in.
There it is. And who's afraid of the Stars? No one's afraid of the Dallas Stars. Lanch got this. Lanch are going to the final.
Okay.
That's
Vegas. Vegas is in
the standings for the first time this season.
Yeah, Vegas is in a good spot to make it in a second wild card, which would knock out the Blues and the Wild, who are desperate times right now. But
Pam Beasley is a Blues fan, so.
Yes. The New York Rangers right now are leading the race for the President's Cup.
We jump back to the East here.
Yep, they're leading the race for the President's Cup, but the Boston Bruins, the Carolina Hurricanes,
and the Dallas Stars
are right there, all within 3 points, with three games to go for those teams.
How many times have you wiped Boston from the face of this earth in existence? Like, how the, are they
the hockey
this,
team in Massachusetts? From existing? The hockey team in Massachusetts.
Okay.
My mistake.
The Panthers, I know you're behind, but I don't understand this.
Oh, the Ice Cats.
Team.
Yeah, but if the Ice Cats fail me in the playoffs, they also might no longer exist.
Did you do a long bet on them?
No, my long bet was on the New Jersey Devils, who definitely won't be in the playoffs. Because they were supposed to be a lot better. They were supposed to be a lot better this year, and then it never materialized. So, the Islanders have to play the Rangers still, which is a big game, and they have to play the Penguins on the last day of the season.
There we go. So Pittsburgh's getting in. I can see it already.
That's going to be a massive matchup between the Pens and the Islanders. Now, the Pens are going to need some help, too, because 3 points is a lot of points to make up. Well, it's not a lot.
They're going to beat everybody. They're going to win against everybody.
They play the Red Wings next. That's a game with a team that they're in this battle with. They play the Boston Bruins, who are the hockey team from Massachusetts, who will annihilate them. Then they play the Predators, who are technically in a playoff spot right now. They're going to be in the wild card, I think. That's another playoff team. And then they play the Islanders. The Penguins have a brutal schedule to close. So... I love the idea of them getting left out because they're from Pittsburgh. The Caps, who did get a win. Ovechkin has been absolutely amazing down the second half of the season, scoring goals, it feels like, every game. They play the Buffalo.
They don't suck again?
They play, we know bleeping suck no more. They've got a tough schedule. They've still got some work to do. They needed this win because it breaks what had been a brutal losing streak because honestly the Red Wings are the last team they beat before this. They had been on a great run, and then they beat Detroit in overtime, then they went to Toronto, lost in a shootout to the Boston, went to Buffalo, lost to Pittsburgh, lost to Carolina, lost in overtime to Ottawa. This win tonight ends that losing streak. Now they got to go back to Buffalo, kind of need to win. Then they host Tampa Bay, Boston. Probably would like to have one of those before they go to Philadelphia, which is one of the teams chasing them. So, very, very interesting close to the season for these teams. I can't wait. It's going to be an exciting end to the season. The Red Wings are also obviously not out of it. going to be a wild finish. I can't wait. I mean, the race to get in the Stanley Cup playoff is going to be amazing. And then once you're in, that's going to be nuts. The Rangers, as I said, they're leading the President's Cup race right now, but the Hurricanes are right behind them. The hockey team from Massachusetts and the Dallas Stars all within 3 points. Although there is a bit of a curse with that. Teams who win the President's Trophy historically do not get out of the first round, and if they do, they don't make it past that. It has been a long, long time since someone has won the President's Cup and then went on to win the Stanley Cup. They have a tradition of calling it the Biden Cup on the Le Batard Show, which I actually think that the NHL should adopt. Whoever the president is at the time, just call it that cup. I think that would be funny. The last time that someone won the President's Cup and the Stanley Cup, 2012-2013. It was the Chicago Blackhawks. Been a while.
And nothing bad has happened to them since. The NBA, we talked about with less vigor here because neither of us pay as much attention to the regular season.
Who cares about if the NBA doesn't care about the regular season, why do I care about it?
The highlight, though, is that the Lakers and Warriors have played themselves into a position to where they're both looking – they're going to both be play-in teams. Right now, if the season were in today, they play each other as 9 and 10 seeds. So they both missed the playoffs in the old-school playoffs. But the play-in that they've created, because I guess they wanted LeBron to take it easy, they would have to play each other. So after one game, one of those teams would be eliminated, and the NBA is not happy about that. But, Joe, like I did with hockey, tell me who's going to win something.
It's the Boston Celtics. I mean, they're going to win the NBA championship. I don't know what you want to say.
They're the number one seed in the East. They're going to win the championship?
No. They will go to the championship this year. They will win the East, but they are going to lose the Denver Nuggets. I think the Nuggets repeat.
Nuggets the 2 seed.
Jokic
Nuggets
is
repeat.
Really good. Jokic is really, really good. I don't think anybody beats him.
I'm cheering for the Knicks to do more than usual. I'm not cheering for them to. They're not going to go to the Eastern Conference Final. I know that. It's hard for me to like not think the Bucks are going to have a good chance, but like they've never got it going since getting
Doc Rivers
as their coach, and they never got it going. So it's like I'm not pulling from what I've seen to say, oh yeah, the Bucks are going to come out of the East. So it's hard to argue with your Celtics, but because I'm just not going to take them. Yeah, I'll take the Bucks. Look at the Magic as the 3 seed. Good for them. So I'll take the Bucks. I'm taking the field against the Nuggets, which is probably stupid. What if these Timberwolves do it? We've seen these teams do this in the last 6 to 8 years. We've seen the Raptors. We've seen others that I, you know, the Nuggets. It felt like that's what the Nuggets did. They just kind of come in there, and all of a sudden they're good and ready to go. Timberwolves. Give me the Timberwolves. Though the Thunder are interesting with that, with the very good player that they have there, the 3-named player.
Yeah, to push back a
this
little
is good,
bit.
This good breaking down of teams.
To push
that
back a little bit.
With 3 names.
The Nuggets didn't come out. The Nuggets were a team that had had a decent playoff run the year before they won the title. Like,
yeah.
So the
Raptors came out of nowhere. Raptors came from further. How's that?
They came from further. They had been a team in the playoffs that had battled in the postseason, and then they added a Kawhi Leonard. So
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the 3-named guy that I was trying to come up with there.
Right. I do think it's too early for the Thunder. They're not going to win the West.
Yeah, I said Minnesota.
I think that's unlikely, too. I think that's unlikely, too. Not that it's impossible, but unlikely. I just think Denver's better. I think push comes to shove, Jokic in the postseason is going to be hard to deal with.
Yeah, probably. All right. We probably won't dig into the NBA too much until some of this stuff gets sorted out. I know everybody in the world will be talking about the Lakers do, but I would just like to see LeBron get out of LA. I'd like to see it mixed up. So, like, let him select a – let LeBron's
you know,
kid
it brings,
select a school.
Yeah. You know, I heard a theory. You're not going to like the destination, but
University
I heard –
University of Miami.
No. That's a real one that I heard.
Oh, okay.
I heard one this weekend that made me laugh. Liberty University.
For LeBron's kid?
And LeBron goes to the Wizards, which that was the part where I was like, LeBron to the Wizards is where that falls apart. Because LeBron would look at his kid and be like, no.
Yeah.
Nowhere, Virginia Tech, UVA, JMU, Liberty, insert Virginia school here, is out. Is out. I was getting ready to say maybe ODU, but the Charlotte Hornets aren't much better than the Wizards, so they're out too. Any school in North Carolina.
But Maryland would be the
any school in Maryland, any school in Virginia, any school in North Carolina is out. 0% chance.
Did you see that Charlotte interviewed a female coach, had a female coach interview this week?
For the Hornets?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine. I did not ask for permission to interview.
I did not.
I don't follow any NBA news.
I saw the headline. I liked it.
Yeah. Which is why, you know, folks can trust my Jokic is going to do really good in the playoffs. Information.
Yeah. We don't have to hold that in there.
I can't wait for the NHL playoffs. I needed this Jackson Holiday news because Liverpool totally, almost as soon as I replied to Jeff Wright saying the champions will be discussed, Liverpool made themselves not the favorite to win the championship anymore. They had to settle for a draw against their rival Man United, which is not good because now we're tied on points with Arsenal, who has a 9-goal advantage on goal differential. We're only a point ahead of Manchester City. We've got some tough matches down the stretch. Our only hope is that Aston Villa sneaks up and picks off Arsenal, or Tottenham does. And that Arsenal gets bogged down in Champions League play. Although they just had a 2-2 draw at home today against Bayern Munich, so they may not be in that competition very long. So, I don't know. This sucks. Like, if Manchester City wins, that's probably the worst possible outcome because I hate them. So that'll be what happens. I hate them, so they'll win.
My soccer talk was that I'm happy that the USA women won tonight. It was on TNT, TBS channels there, against Canada. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy it. At least you're playing, you win. I like it. So it was exciting on extra extended kicks, I guess, sudden death
penalties,
penalty kicks. Yeah. So it was fun.
Yeah. I don't want to poo-poo the tournament. I understand why the tournament exists. I support it.
I want them to win.
The women's tournament should be able to have tournaments created solely for cash, just like the men's tournaments that are created solely for cash.
But Canada's no slump.
They're not. And neither is Japan and neither is Brazil. And we won the tournament, which is great. I've just seen us win this tournament before. And then we go into the Women's World Cup and we look like how we looked. My fear is for when we play in a bigger tournament and it's more matches and a more condensed schedule, what's going to happen? I will say I have more confidence in the women winning and doing well in these tournaments, aka the Olympics, than I do the men because I think they're better. I think, yes, they have more talent and I think the coaching is probably better. I think the men, we hired Greg Berhalter because the players like Greg Berhalter. I think that's a bad thing. I don't think our players on the men's side should be comfortable. They haven't earned that. They're not good enough for that. And I think we should hire somebody who doesn't like MLS. That should be our men's national team. Our men's national team coach should not like MLS. He should look and say, these guys are playing in Europe. Okay, they're probably better because here's a fact. They're better. And then they come back over here. We have more success because they're better and we're playing our better players. It's kind of like the Gio Reyna thing. And it's kind of like the Orioles, right? Colton Cowser is better than Austin Hayes. Colton Cowser gets in. What's he do today? He gets 4 RBIs and is hitting over 400. We're going to put Austin Hayes in the lineup tomorrow for S&Gs. He's going to go out there and suck. And then I'm going to be told, well, you know, we got to get him out of this slump. It's the only way he's ever going to get out of it. And I'm like, or this isn't a slump and this is who he is. and we send him to Norfolk or Oakland or Sacramento or wherever. Like
Sacramento, that's where the A's are going to play.
Yeah. Like, I don't...
Which makes good sense.
Yeah. Well, because I... Major League Baseball, that's real life Major League, the movie. That is real life Major League, the movie. They sent a guy down from AAA to work on his strikeouts. The opening series of the season, he had a strikeout in 3 games and was the best hitter on the team. And I in our group chat with my friends that are baseball fans, I was like, I sent the image of the owner from Major League. And I'm like, this is who is running the team right now. Like, you can't move to Vegas. If we win, people will start coming. Like, we gotta lose. No. And just
going to Sacramento for 3 to 4 years is just,
it's crazy. Cause Leland, here's the thing. They say, oh, it's until, you know, the stadium in Vegas gets finished. Who's paying for that stadium? The city of Las Vegas still hasn't approved the funding, and the state of Nevada hasn't approved the funding. Who's doing this? Major League Baseball needs to step in and look at that owner and say, you're selling the team because nobody likes you. Nobody in Las Vegas likes you. Nobody in Oakland likes you. And you know how bad it is with this ownership group? When they're having the press conference to talk about they're going to go play in Sacramento, the owners, like, this is going to be the most intimate setting in Major League Baseball, meaning it's going to be the smallest stadium in Major League Baseball by a mile.
And that's what I don't get.
14,000 if they bring in extra seats. It's 14,000. That's it. And when he's talking about the most intimate setting in Major League Baseball, he says, I can't wait to watch players like Aaron Judge come here and hit home runs. Aaron Judge doesn't play for his team. He named 0 Oakland A's when he was talking about the players who would come there and hit home runs. Nobody on his own team. The guy is actively rooting against his own team. It's insane. Now, I don't think he could name an Oakland A. I think if you put a gun to his head and said, name a player on your team, you'd have to pull the trigger, because I don't think he could do it. He would play a game of chicken with you and be like, you're not going to shoot me. That's what he would do.
What I don't get is that they're going to play in Sacramento at the AAA clubs stadium. Las Vegas has a AAA stadium down there. It's the Las Vegas...
Yeah,
Aviators.
Aces, and they said no. They turned down the A's. They did not want to share the stadium.
It's the Las Vegas Aviators. It is.
Oh.
I think it used to be called the Aces.
Okay.
I think I said that to you the other day in a text. It's not. It's the Aviators now.
Okay. Good for them.
They're the Oakland A's AAA affiliate.
That's probably why he couldn't say no.
Stadium that already houses Oakland A's products said no to the major league team coming. Like, how sad is that?
Yeah, it's not
this
great.
Dude is so hated he can't even get his minor league host.
It's the Giants
the major league team.
It's the Giants minor league affiliate that they have to go to.
Yeah, in Sacramento.
I can't believe
split the stadium with the Giants.
I can't believe that minor league owner had the guts to say
they're
the
buddies.
Major league team.
Those guys are buddies. That's his only friend in the world.
I can't believe he had the guts to tell him no. I mean, that is
in Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But I don't think that stadium gets built, Leland. I don't think the city of Las Vegas is going to approve it. No one wants the team the way it's built and the way he's ran it to be there. He's driven it straight into the ground.
Now, that place does hold less. It only holds 8,100 and 10,000 with standing room. So maybe that plays a factor. I don't know.
In the Las Vegas owner
like
saying no? Because it wasn't.
Go up in Sacramento.
Oakland didn't say no. The Las Vegas owner said no. The Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's what No, that's what I mean. Maybe like it was part of it. Like, we don't have a capacity to suit a major league team. funny enough, it's the A's. They're not a major league team.
So. They're not. Like, that's someone put out the tweet, you know, as a joke, like, Sacramento will be the first team to host two AAA teams. Like, or the first city to host two AAA teams. Like, it's bad. It's bad in Oakland.
Yeah.
The fans, on
opening day, they did like a reverse.
That was awesome.
Not even a reverse. It was still a holdout. They all went to the stadium and then never went in. They stayed in the parking lot. Listened to the radio, had TV set up, cheered for their teams. They do like that's what I appreciate. Those fans do like the team. They just hate how the teams run. So, like, it's that battle. And I appreciate going and not going in. Like, that proves a point. They can see you protesting and the seats are empty. Like, that's good. When you do the reverse where, like, everybody goes to show them, like, we still care about this team and then we're not coming tomorrow. Like, well, they just made money off of you.
Yeah.
I like them going all but in. Like,
and I think that's what it is. I think now, nothing. Yeah, now it is, we're not going to give you another penny more. And that's going to hurt. That's what's going to hurt. And it's wild, Leland, because, I mean, to speak to just the PR nightmare that this owner has created, they have turned comments off on all their social media posts. All of the social media posts, they shut comments off. Like, you can't reply. Now, he owns an MLS team. I don't know if the comments are still open for that or if he shut them off on those too. Because what had been happening is the Oakland A's fans would go on that MLS team's social media post and comment, sell the A's. So I'm sure he probably figured that out and shut that off too. But, like, this guy is like, when it gets that bad that you're like, you know what? The only solution here is to shut off comments. Like,
to not hear it.
Yeah. Yikes, dude. Come on. You're a Major League Baseball team. What are you doing? Major League Baseball, what are you doing? Like, step in and say, no, you're not moving. You're going to stay. The team is going to stay. You're going to leave. Like, you can go live in Las Vegas, but you're not taking the team with you. Like, he's bad for baseball. So
they made Marge Schott sell that team. What other baseball teams did they make sell?
I don't know. The Angelosis was a quick approval. They could not wait to get rid of them.
Yeah, that was a quick approval, but that still wasn't forced out. Like, Marge Schott's the only one I can remember. That's probably a little bit before your time, isn't it?
It was, yep.
That's the Reds. I assume you knew that. So.
It's going to take something like that, though. It's going to take, like, a big, big scandal. And I don't know, like... I just hate it. Like, it's bad for baseball. And you know what else is bad for baseball? The players union. Like, what are you doing, dude? I know there's a rash of pitching injuries, but being like, oh, the pitch clock's doing it. I'm like, of course. The players union is going to find the one thing that has made the game watchable and try to take it away. Like, they're not going to win because Johns Hopkins did a study, and Johns Hopkins said there is absolutely zero evidence to suggest that the pitch clock...
That's what I was talking about, the 12-month... program that a lot of these pitchers are doing where they're pitching all off season now. I would say that has a big factor.
Yep.
I think the kid's coming up. I don't think this is just like at the league level. I think this is the kids that are concentrating on baseball and all they do is play baseball all year instead of playing some basketball or playing some football or running track. You know, I don't know who we're wanting to throw into football right now, but, you know, doing some other things, using your muscles in different ways so you don't just work that pitching arm 12 months a year.
And I
think that's like, and it's been working this way. So now those guys that did that from age 8 up are now major leaguers and they're just getting their orchids. They're Steven Strasburg.
And
so
trying to throw as hard as they can, as young as they can. Like, yeah. That's another problem that Justin Verlander even said.
He never threw as hard as he could, and look what he did.
Justin Verlander said, I didn't start trying to throw hard until I was in college. And
he's having a lengthy career.
Yeah, and...
he's gotten hurt some, but okay. Yeah, like,
but he's also toward the end of his career, like, where it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, pitching...
also made it to now. Steven Strasburg didn't make it to now.
Yeah, you know what the answer is, like, Major League Baseball Players Union? The pitching motion is not healthy for the arm. That's your answer. Like, injuries happen because that's not a healthy thing.
It's an unnatural motion. The softball motion is a more natural motion than what baseball does.
The pitch clock, Johns Hopkins did a study, and that was Major League Baseball when they turned it down and the Players Union tried to file a grievance over it. Major League Baseball cited, like, this is not a good faith argument. Like, and this is one I don't stick up for the owners a lot, but this is one where the owners are right. Like, Johns Hopkins did a study on this. Johns Hopkins is an actual medical university with actual doctors and actual people who do actual research. And they said, no, there is absolutely no evidence to suggest that these two things are related. The pitching injuries were happening before the pitch clock. Yes, there's a rash right now, but that's not pitch clock related because the rash of injuries didn't happen in AAA at the same rate. It's something else. And you just brought up a lot of issues there, Leland, that I think are way, way more likely to be involved. You can't pitch 12 months a year. You can't throw from age 8 trying to throw 70 or 80 miles an hour all, and then try to see if you can tap 100 while you're in college or high school. Like, you can't do that. Like, it's not going to end well for you or your arm. And I just, when the players are just like, well, it's the pitch clock, that's obviously what it is. I'm just like, great. You know what? Why don't we just, here's an idea. All these pitchers are getting hurt. Let's just stop baseball. Just kill baseball now, because that's what you're going to do if you get rid of the pitch clock. You're going to go back to 4-hour games, and it's going to be unwatchable. So just, this is one where the players union, who has a lot of good ideas for other things, needs to just shut up. Don't change that rule, because if that rule changes, you are hurting yourself. Because here's the other thing they're, I had to catch myself. Here's the other thing they're complaining about. Well, MLB's player salaries are going down. What? Why is that? Why are player salaries going down? Because your TV ratings are going down, which means your TV contracts are about to go down, which means that the piece of the pie is not going to be as big. I know. Let's get rid of the thing that actually people liked. And when TV ratings went up because of the pitch clock, let's get rid of that. Get them to go back down so we can then sit here and go, oh, why is everyone making less money? And it's also MLB teams.
I've always loved baseball.
Yes. But the pitch clock is a great idea.
I absolutely love this pitching clock. I watch more baseball now.
Yes. The pitch clock is a great idea. And I've got news for you. Major League Baseball teams are figuring out that, hey, paying the guy like $300 and $400 and $500 million isn't a good idea. The Dodgers probably wish they hadn't paid Shohei Ohtani $700 million right now. That's not injury related.
Well, they haven't been paying him yet.
That's true. That's not injury related. But could you imagine, the Dodgers are being really quiet right now because it's like, well, we got prime Shohei years. But if he starts to not, as soon as he starts to not perform, if it gets toward that expensive part, they're going to relaunch an investigation into that and be like, oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
He's gambling again. Could you imagine? That would be wild.
News that came in while we've been on the podcast. Riverheads beat the pants off Fort Defiance in baseball tonight. So Riverheads does have that 2 now wins in the district. So Fort Defiance might be joining Stewart's Draft in those teams that were a little surprised. They're not quite what they were. So that'll be there. And then I just want to hit again on our way out. It was a conversation with our number one listener of the Exports podcast. Her and I had was about how classy Don Staley is, and how, I know you hit it hard early. I just want to come back to it. I think of all the negative I've said about coaches lately or tentatively, Don Staley's the opposite. And me as a Hokie and cheering against UVA, just honestly, for me, it just doesn't get better than Don Staley. As much as I like Kenny Brooks, if Kenny Brooks was still Virginia Tech, I'd still say this. Don Staley's the best. I like her the best. I thought a lot of Pat Summitt. I respect Gino Auriemma from UConn, great coaches, but Dawn Staley is my favorite. She's absolutely just great. I love how she handles herself all the time. And I think we saw that in her comments following the final game, still celebrating about her team and happy about that. But also, you know, giving Iowa credit and Caitlin Clark credit and acknowledging what Caitlin Clark has had on her back all year. I loved everything about what Don Staley did these last few days. And I'm not surprised is what is the main thing. It's what she does. That's who she is. So it's awesome.
Yeah. Congrats to Don Staley. But that will do it for us on this week's episode of the Yak Sports Podcast. Make sure you're telling your friends, family, if you're in Augusta County and care about the local sports. We will be talking about those as it gets going. If you're a fan of baseball in particular, stay plugged in, because as long as the Orioles are good, we'll be talking a lot about it. And hopefully now that Jackson Holiday is up, he is just
the
first of many.
Angel Hernandez screw up the other night?
Well, I know the one you're talking about, a peak
Angel Hernandez. Oh, it was bad.
Oof. Yeah, where he calls strike three on a pitch that's one, not in the zone, and two, the pitcher has stepped off the rubber. Yeah, yeah.
And he pointed at the bat that didn't swing.
Yeah, like it's he's just not good at his job, and like
he can't even screw up right.
I am constantly amazed, because it's like every time he umpires a game behind home plate, there's another video from the game of like, can you believe he missed this call? And I'm always like, yeah I can. Like, you could tell me that Angel Hernandez goes out there and calls strike three on the first pitch of the game, and I'd be like, yeah, I'm not surprised. Like,
for our listeners, so you know, when Joe said the umpire needed to be living in a box underneath of a bridge, didn't even deserve the box, Angel Hernandez, who he's talking about. So this is why we brought him up.
Yeah. And you know what? Going back to referees, the one who made the call for the illegal screen gets to live in a mansion, because it was an illegal screen and they called the game consistently all the way through, which is what they should be doing. So mansion for that ref. Mansion for that ref.
Consistently all the way through, I think, is bold, because we saw contact earlier in that game though.
Mansion for that ref, homeless, no box for Angel Hernandez. Like, that, he is literally going to be the reason they bring in robot umpires. They might call them the Angel Hernandez strikes, like, robot umpires, because he's going to be the reason that they come. And here's the thing, this is the other thing. The MLB Players Association, by wanting to get rid of the pitch clock and dinosaurs, are what's trying to kill baseball. Like, well, you can't have a robot umpire strike zone. That's going to ruin the game. I love watching bad calls. That's part of the game. What a dumb argument. What a stupid argument. I mean, look, if we got to put child safety locks on the Tide dispensers or on the Tide bottles, because they're going to eat the Tide Pods, then we need robot umpires. That's the deal we make in society. If we're putting the child safety locks on to stop people from eating Tide Pods, then we have to have robot umpires. That's the rules. If we don't want robot umpires, okay, but then we got to get rid of the child safety locks on the Tide Pods. If a teenager eats a Tide Pod, they eat a Tide Pod. It wasn't really... To my understanding, the Tide Pod Challenge wasn't started by 5-year-olds. It was started
by teenagers. That better. Yes.
Who are, by the way,
5-year-olds.
By the way, are going to figure out the child safety line. So who are we really protecting? We're just making it more annoying for me. If that kid eats a Tide Pod, okay. To me, that's solving a problem for society later down the road. I don't know why we need to stop that. We need to fix the umpire problem that we have. Put the robot umpires in. Until next week, folks. More stuff like this, too. Subscribe on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Make sure you're subscribing on Twitter, YAC Sports Pod, and on Facebook, YAC Sports Pod. That's Yak Sports Pod, your Augusta County Sports Podcast. Or you can email us at yaksportspod@gmail.com, too, if that's your thing. Let us know, how excited are you that Jackson Holiday got called up? That's what we want to know this week. That's what I want to know. What did you think about the women's tournament and the men's tournament? Is UConn the best team ever in college basketball history? Because it sure felt like it. But let us know what you think.
No is my answer to that. But that's
I think you're wrong, but okay. Who's better?
I think some of those mid-90s teams... like really great teams that came through there.
I don't think so.
I think especially with playing with a big center like they did, like I think some other teams that come through like that would
I think the guard play was just so much better than they would get in the mid-90s. I think it's...
Yeah, I mean... I don't know. I wasn't prepared to make that argument, but let me see. Maybe I'll interact with you on social media.
And okay. Give
you
maybe opinion. Leland will comment and tell me why I'm wrong and point out, you know, Grant Hill's Duke team that he loved so much. Until then, folks, make sure you're subscribing to the podcast. I was wondering if you're going to say something or not. But until then, folks, have a great week.
You've been listening to Yak Sports, your Augusta County sports podcast.